I'm Christopher Lydon on the slum side of the new India's most famous boomtown, Bangalore. We've come just 3 miles south and east of the center of town, across the moat of human sewage into the Lakshman Ram Nagar, as it's called, and suddenly we're someplace else. Call it squalid. It's also outwardly safe. It's bustling, busy, even a welcoming hive, I'd say, of maybe 10,000 families, 50,000 Indians, where 25 years ago there were only shrubs and trees. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. In this one, Brinda Adige, a community organizer, is our guide among the new poor, who are cheek to cheek with India's new rich in the global companies like Infosys and in information technology in general. Brinda, how did the slum get here?
Slum got here 25 years ago. Though at that point of time, I was in college and I used to come and teach for about 10, 20 children. And there were about 8, 10 houses, huts over here. Now, the whole slum has grown because since 91, 92, we've had this huge boom, Bangalore becoming the Silicon City. And B, because of lots of companies coming into Bangalore, a lot of constructions happening. And you need people to construct. And a lot of people began to migrate from the villages from different states, from Tamil Nadu, from Andhra Pradesh, as well as from the districts in Karnataka, to be part of this entire boom of constructing roads, flyovers, bridges, and buildings. And that's how all of these slums have come up.
Mm.
But today, the slum caters to much more for these industries to be there. People working in these companies require somebody to also run their homes, clean their homes, cook their meals. And it's the people from here coming. So a lot of the women here are domestic workers in the homes of people working in Infosys, Wipro, Saxon, and name it, whatever you may have. A lot of them need drivers, and there are men and boys from the slum who are drivers. A lot of them have huge gardens, and they need gardeners, and they want someone living close by. And I say close by, about 5-6 miles, coming every day and going. So this is the slum that caters that manpower, that resource.
It's a working slum, and we can see it on the street. People taking bicycles apart, putting them back together again. A lot of people seem to know just what they're doing around here.
A lot of people, even if they do not really know, at least pretend that they know and they are doing something, because that's human nature. I need to be doing something to at least feel my own self-worth.
Where is the power, Brinda, that we don't see? The police power, the school power, the market power, maybe even the gangster power. But where does real power hide in this slum?
When you ask me personally, it's the people, but they're not yet awakened. They're not yet informed, and they've not got ready yet. But they are. There is a silent revolution happening, and I'm happy to be part of it.
Mm.
If you look at the other side, then yes, there are gangsters. There are leaders, self-proclaimed leaders. There are the police. The police are here every day after 7:30 in the evening, presumably to keep law and order, because by then, all the men come back from work drunk, ready to fight with everybody who's on the street, and mostly with their families beating them up. So the police is there to maintain law and order.
Brinda, would you walk us around Lakshman Ram Nagar? Never seen anything quite like it before.
My pleasure. I'll be happy to take you around. Okay, this is the spot where I would like to say that I made an entry into this slum because I was supposed to attend to a case of this girl who was being beaten by her husband. And nobody in the community was really willing to lend a hand or support in any manner. So I had to do something about it. So I asked for a mat and spread the mat on the street and sat down. And I said that somebody who is the elder in this community needs to come and sit with us. So there was one of the other ladies who came and sat. And somebody else came and told us that there is one man who is actually considered the leader of this place. So though I knew who this man was, and personally I'm not someone who's very happy with this man, I said that the powers that be must be recognized. So I invited him also to come and sit with us. In India we have this concept of panchayats. Five elderly in a village or a community get together to arbitrate and sort out a problem that has come out of the community for the people, a complainant and someone who is the accused. And the community takes responsibility for that issue and to bring about justice. So that was the idea that I took the mat and I sat down here.
And did the community understand exactly what you were doing?
Well, the community in the beginning did not. Probably they just thought, I have nowhere to sit, because everybody began inviting me to their homes and somebody brought chairs and somebody decided to bring some cool drinks. And I said, no, I'm here because this problem has come up and I would like to know how many of you know that this is a problem. So people were silent for a very long time. And I said, do you think that this is a problem? Forget this case that is here. But is there a problem of wives and mothers and sisters getting beaten every day in their homes by their fathers, brothers and husbands? And so, you know, we heard some rumblings and mumblings in the crowd and they said, yes, we all get beaten. So is that why you're sitting here? And I said, no. It's just that we need to talk about it loudly, openly. That's all. And then we began to talk about this particular case. And when the community began to talk about it, the person who was now all the while standing and saying, I'm her husband and she belongs to me, and if she does something wrong, then I have a right to beat her, now began to say, I'm sorry, I know what I did was wrong, and this is not something I'm supposed to be doing. I married her because I loved her. I will protect her, but, you know, sometimes I get angry. And so I began to ask the same questions. Is anger something that only men get, or women also get angry? And they said, yeah, but you know, women should not raise their hands or their voice when they get angry. Only the men have a right to do that. Mm-hmm. So getting into it, it took us almost 4 hours. I sat here and we came to a conclusion that the community will see that the husband doesn't beat her.
Would you introduce us, Brenda, to that young woman's father who...
Yes, this is Anu's father.
அதே இந்த மாதிரி தான் ப்ராப்ளம் ஆகிட்டு மச்சனை விட்டுட்டு போயிட்டவள அவன் விட்டுட்டு வேற மனைவி கல்யாணம் பண்ணிட்டான்.
Even at that time, he really wanted a lot of peace and kept begging the husband that, you know, you should be kind to my daughter, be good to her, because you came and said that you want to marry her. And because you had asked for my daughter's hand, I had agreed, even though she was very young. And he said, yeah, yeah, I know. But that was a long time ago.
As we're standing here, we hear the call to prayer from the mosque. What is the church's place in the social life of the community?
It's more to do with their spirituality, piety, and the understanding that if you are faithful to your God and religion, these are trials and tribulations that confront every human being, you would just be more stronger to be able to confront these things.
In a shanty town, Brenda, so many things are going on. We see live goats, we see dead rats, we see rubble for a whole block here, beautifully painted houses. We also see, you know, electrical lights and wires to houses. Somebody's organizing all this. But who?
Nobody organizes all these things. These have a life of their own. This place that you see, the government is now has allocated some budget to build houses on 15 by 20 sites for the people. Now, if you see all these wires running around, you could see it from the local street lamppost. So, which means there's a lot of electricity that is being illegally taken, used by the people, either for their shops, sometimes for, you know, a place like this doesn't really have electricity, but this one would have electricity because the wires come out from here. How can you have something like this when there is an electricity board? Because the local mafia allows you to do something like that. because you have the blessings of the local leader.
Mm. And some skilled freelance electricians.
This is the place where you have plumbers, electricians, masons, carpenters, anybody and everybody. So people know a lot of different trades. It is a necessity. You could be an electrician and also be someone who lays tiles for the house beautifully, who knows to paint the house just as good. Many of them construct their own homes. Very nice homes like you can see over here. About 4 days ago, there was a murder over here. This was a 17, 18-year-old boy who was murdered 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning at this spot. And the murder is still under investigation because there are no witnesses.
How is it done?
They use something like a sickle to rip his throat and his stomach and his intestines.
What's the guess about why?
It's been gang rivalry. Very often it is like that.
So that's why the police are here?
The police are here because they are hoping that probably just hanging around here, they may be able to get some clues and add it to the investigation and probably get something done with the case. And the stuff on record would be that they are here to maintain law and order, so that this, the group that murdered this boy also was part of some group, does not do similar things. I said that you need to meet Kamakshi because she is a very strong, courageous lady. She's a very brave woman.
And can I ask her, how does she get results?
She goes with the intention of bringing about justice. She doesn't leave the place till justice is done. Normally, யாருக்கு நீங்க நியாயம் பண்றது ஆகுது பொம்பளைங்களுக்கா ஆம்பளைங்களுக்கா Okay, most of her support, most of the justice that she probably arbitrates on is for women and for young girls.
Would you give us an example, a story in the last month?
Okay, this man beats up this lady every day, doesn't give any money to the house, comes home drunk. And this girl is a very soft-spoken, small lady. She's very scared of the husband.
So the
lady had served lunch for him and he had thrown all that around and he had taken some onions, big onions, and hit her on the eye and on the face. Okay, so somebody came and told her that this lady is crying. And so she went to the house to meet this guy and told him that she might give him up to the police, but before that he has to handle her. And she is not afraid of the police. Many times the police will also take money, take bribes, and kind of leave him. So she said that even if the police come, there's nothing that they can do about you. So she had literally beaten him up and asked him also how he felt after getting beaten by her. And then told him to sit here the whole day, not move from that place.
And so then she hung him out to dry right here.
Yes.
This is justice.
Let's call it substantive justice.
You're a brave woman.
Thank you.
I keep looking for anger and I don't see it. People are poor, but they're very friendly. They're welcoming. They all want to know my name, your name. In the cliche, where's the outrage?
I guess the outrage is more against the promises made by people whom they have confided in, whom they have trusted and voted into power. There may be a simmering outrage also to this entire inequality of wealth that is always coming to people who are rich, and not necessarily like the general philosophy that if you work hard, wealth is yours. people do work very hard over here. They work from morning, sometimes 3 a.m. to almost 12:30 at night. But why haven't they become rich? And that's a very big question. I don't have the answer for something like that.
Brenda, we're sitting in a very neat little pink-painted storefront right in the heart of the slum. This seems to be your office, your courthouse, your room. What do you call it? And what do the slum dwellers call it?
The slum dwellers call it the place where if you have a problem, it will get sorted out. There would be a solution that we can find for it. But the underlining message that would go immediately after the sentence is, but you have to be responsible for it. So there's a kind of question mark. I can come to this place where I know I will get a solution, but I have to be responsible for it? It's only when they come here, they realize that the question, the answer, the problem, and the solution lies with them, within them. They just have to take a stand and work on it. I basically consider myself more as a catalyst and not someone who solves problems, but someone who helps people understand that they are responsible to find solutions. They are leaders and they must take a stand. So that's what the people call it over here. They share both their joys and sorrows. We get invited for weddings and festivals and parties and everything over here, as well as when people come and share about their loved ones being in hospitals or somebody who has passed away or a child who is not doing well in school or a adolescent son who is wayward and they need some kind of an advice.
And I still haven't heard the name of an organization. Does it have a name?
It has a name, but the name of the organization is not important. It is necessary because we have to function within a registered framework. So the name of the organization that is registered is Global Concerns India.
Okay. You started it?
I head this, yes. But I also started this along with a friend of mine called Alistair Christie, who lives in Edinburgh. In the UK. He was a geography teacher and used to work long time ago in Singapore and started something called as Global Concerns. And that's how inspired to have this name. But this place and the group that we function with is called Ananya Wakuta. Ananya means unique, indomitable, determined spirit. Okuta means collective. So that's the name of this place and this group.
Tell us other stories of the way correction, education, and reform, it gets worked out.
We have this particular case of a family where there's this girl who has decided that she doesn't want to live with her husband, who's been beating her up, like the same case that I shared with you earlier. And the community came in, they took responsibility. Each of them said that, yes, they will see that the husband doesn't beat her. The family also agreed. They were fine for about 6-7 months. And after that, he began to stop going to work. He stopped going to work. He was unemployed and then began to suspect that the girl who is going to work is now having probably another boyfriend. And began to beat her on those suspicions. But when we began to speak to him, the first thing he said is, my friends are teasing me that I don't have a job. And they're also teasing me that I'm living off the earnings of my wife. And so I'm angry, and that's how I get to beat her. It's just spur of the moment. I haven't thought about it. So I said, why don't you go and beat your friends? No. They are very strong. I can't beat them. So then we called the friends and we said that the girl says that she has tolerated and put up with him for a long time. And now she does not want to continue living with him. She wants to live with her family, with her mother and father, till he can change. He decides that he wants to change. 1 year ago, the girl was not courageous enough to make this kind of a statement. She was not strong. She said that if I move out of the house, people will think I'm a bad woman. But now she feels that she has had enough of him and she wants to move out. Now the whole family, like today we were talking, it's now 6 months since she left that family. So the boy's family has come and told her that the boy has stopped drinking and he is much more peaceful. So this girl has now told that unless he finds a job, she would not come back to live with him. Because in the first place he began hitting her was he had no job. And he was being teased about being unemployed and living off the earnings of his wife. So
somebody could make a difference by finding the poor boy a job.
We did find him a job, but then he didn't like the job. After about 2 months, he said, I don't like the job. So it is always going to be like that, because the human nature is, when I make a decision, I feel somewhere deep inside me to be responsible for that decision. When all of you make a decision for me, A, I feel that you've done some charity to me, you've been benevolent to me, and after a point, I'm not responsible. So, well, if he wants a job, he has to find a job. He has to decide what is the kind of job that he wants and keep the job, because it is on that decision will he have his wife back.
The phrase that keeps coming back in my head is private affluence and public squalor. The phrase was John Kenneth Galbraith's, you know, punchline of a famous book from the 1950s in America, The Affluent Society. He was a great friend of John F. Kennedy's. He became ambassador to India. He was, as Americans go, he was certainly of the socialist persuasion. He was a great friend of Nehru's. But I look around this scene and India in general, the new India, and you have to say, booming private profit and wealth and an almost irrelevant mushrooming of severe poverty and neglect. I keep wondering, where is Indian socialism? Where is public spirit? Where is simple planning that says when you build a brand new boomtown of high-tech engineers who are going to have drivers and servants and hairdressers and barbers and whatnot, we've got to plan for them too. Why are they improvising it out of sticks and stones here in a shanty town outside the most famous big, rich, new town in this subcontinent? I don't mean to sound critical about it either, but it's kind of amazing.
It is amazing. To the former part of your question, private affluence, this has increased again over the last 20 years with globalization and free market and liberal market. Now, all of this was done without any planning. Our doors were wide open for any industry, any company, anybody to come in without making any consideration for the people and how they are going to receive it. And that is something that we are still grappling with, saying, okay, where do we put the stops? Where do we put the gaps? Where do we bring in a discipline? Where do we need to regulate? Where is the control? So that's a different whole set of battle that is happening on a different level. Now, to cater to this private affluence has come in this public squalor, if I may say, use your phrase. And yes, we are now battling with this issue of, since the 74th Amendment, we are supposed to be having local self-governance councils that address the issue of planning, infrastructure, basic needs, people deciding what they want with a given budget. Well, the state government doesn't want to let go of power. It's a group of bureaucrats, a group of intelligentsia, a group of institutions that come together to plan for all of us.
But at some levels, India planned spectacularly well. These institutes of technology and science and design and so many other things really foresaw the need for certain kinds of workers, and they've got them today.
Well, yes, that is the private affluence. When I have that kind of an affluence, I sit in a position of power to ask and demand for a certain different kind of planning. If you look at Electronic City, it is planned very differently. If you look at the road leading to the Electronic City, very different. You have an underpass, and you have an overpass, and you have a flyover, and you have all the lights and the roads and the drainage, everything done beautifully. Good. 10 years ago. This is a slum for the last 25 years that is still struggling with simple drainage. In fact, when you meet our women, they would be telling you that day after tomorrow, they are going to meet the council's water supply office. Because for the last 2 years, this particular slum has got water meters. And all the people paid a little advance amount to get these meters, hoping that they would have water pipes fitted into their homes. But if you go there, just next lane, if you see, the water meters are sitting up there, nice and shiny, not connected to any pipe. Yet, every month, we have a water bill. Can you even imagine the irony of something like this? There is no water pipe. There is no flowing water. There is a water meter that is not connected, very safely kept into a cupboard like this. There is a bill that comes every month. It is issued to each of these people there, having a particular space with a number of the house and the water bill.
Do they have to pay it?
Yes, they have to pay it. But then we are in protest. We are not paying because there's no water, there's no connection.
And you say this slum in Bangalore is a thing of beauty compared to Mumbai.
Absolutely. It's much organized. You find lanes and streets, some kind of a road, even though they may not be really tarred roads, but there is some kind of a road. There would be an address to each of these with crosses and mains. And like you see, there are a lot of these houses, spaces that have been allocated with double-story buildings. So yes, it is much more organized. Well, whether it is cleaner, whether they have drainage, whether they have drinking water, do all the houses have electricity? That's a question.
In Trivandrum the other day, in Kerala, we saw people marching down the street every day for something. Where is the protest? Where is the organization? Where is the campaigning around here at the popular level to do something?
The campaigning is all over Bangalore City. All over.
Really?
You will find different groups campaigning, from not allowing the government to cut trees to widen roads, to using less plastic, to bringing about clean roads. So you would have different kinds of protests by different sections and, if I may say, classes of people.
Describe them.
You have this class of people that would say, don't use plastic. But if I am living in this slum over here, for me, plastic is cheaper than paper.
Yeah.
I would certainly not use organic vegetables. Getting vegetables itself is a luxury for me. So that is, here I would fight if I don't get vegetables. There is a group of people that would say, oh, don't use so much of fertilizers because it is harmful for my body. But I would say, just give me vegetables because I need to still live. I need to be strong enough to work tomorrow. And this is manual labor. Here we are going to have a protest day after tomorrow. We're going to ask, why are our meters not connected to our water pipes? We also go on protests when we find that the police may be high-handed and beat up somebody on the street. We would also go on a protest when we find that some of the girls have been molested or assaulted. And when you see these big rallies, normally they're rallies supported by political parties. They have the kind of money to have that kind of a rally also. For us, it becomes very difficult to just gather people because we have to have the rally when the people finish their work, their job for the day. When the wives have already cooked for their husbands and children, they have filled water for their husbands and children. And they've taken care of everything in the house and say, I still have 2 hours to spare and let's now go on the rally. Because I have to ask, demand, challenge why I do not have electricity. Why the public distribution shop does not open every day.
Brinda Adigay, we keep chasing this label, the new India, but here in this slum in Bangalore, at the core of India's new wealth, I mean, the plot thickens. This is new India, too.
Yes, it is.
It wasn't here 25 years ago. What is your feeling at the end about this new India?
The new India is a vibrant India, very strong India. India which is, in fact, emerging as one of the youngest countries in the world. As you know, we have a population, very large population of youths between the ages of 15 and 35. Mm. That being the present situation, it is a power to contend with. We also know that the new India has popped up a lot of different issues. There is the issue of affluence, there is the issue of poverty, there's the issue of corruption. There is also a silent revolution that different people have taken it upon themselves to be able to take a stand. Stand against corruption, stand against degradation of the environment, stand against violations of human rights, stand against any form of injustice. This is New India. For a very long time, we were a complacent society. Freedom from the British. Assumptions that the government that we elect will look after our needs. Assumptions that the government that we elect will know what is best for us. Will do everything for our benefit. 63 years down the line, we have realized we've just replaced the British with people we've elected to a large extent. Now we want our voices to be heard from my home to the place where decisions and policies and budget allocations get done.
Are you talking about the so-called Brown Sahib? The Indians playing the part of the old imperialists?
Yes, the Brown Sahibs. Yes, you're right. We want to tell them that there is no Sahib. There is only citizens. And there are only citizen representatives. And that even though my constitution provides that there is a elected representative I can recall, this has not yet become a implementation action. There is no sanction to implement this constitutional right. So, yes, there are groups of people working on this. Our organization is also partnering and working with groups that is working on the proportionate electoral system, because the present electoral system doesn't really consider all of its people and all of its voters. It's a majority that comes to power, and the calculation of this majority is very different. We're looking at now something called as the proportionate electoral system, so that every faction, every section of the society is proportionately represented.
What is the role of microlenders in this community?
Very, very big. There are several organizations over here who work on that issue of microfinancing, as we call it. Almost 80% of the women living in the slum, women, are part of minimum of 3 different microfinance groups. So sometimes they would borrow from group 1 to pay back the loan they have taken from group 2. Borrow from group 3 to pay the loan for group 1. And so they are constantly in debt.
And paying a high percentage too.
Very high.
Is microfinancing a false promise in your view?
I don't know about the false promise as much as the manner of implementation that is happening. The objective was good. The objective was to make women economically self-sufficient or at least economically stronger. But that has not been the case in a majority of the lives of women here. We do not give any loans for the women over here. I went house to house to tell them that we are building a women's collective to address all issues, but we will not give any loans. We do not borrow, we do not lend. If they are willing to be part of this collective, they can come. The first day we had 5 people and we discussed issues, everything that concerns their families and their community. Now we have 60. Everybody can be part of this group. It's a very open group. But again, power relations. So I try to see how to be that catalyst to balance that power. There are some women who are more vocal, some women who are more aggressive. Some women like Lily, very quiet, very submissive. So to bring the group to a certain level of playing on a level playing ground, it takes a little bit of encouragement and a little bit of telling somebody, okay, your chance is over, don't talk, give the chance to somebody else. And when the person keeps quiet and somebody else gets the chance to speak, I again ask this person, why were you quiet all this while? You think every time I should be your mouthpiece? Are you giving me a salary to be your mouthpiece? And so this person feels very bad and says, okay. You know, because it has to come from within them. They mustn't think that somebody else is going to do it for them. There are days I tell them, they ask me, how long will this place be open? And I said, I don't know, till the money is there. We can shut it tomorrow. It doesn't matter. So there are days we will not open this and we will have the meeting on the street. The group that we have here is somebody who has to address everything. Everybody must be equipped with the phone numbers of the police stations, with the ambulance, with the hospital, with anybody else. All the leaders over here. The group that comes here might have its affinities with various political factions. But when they come here, they have to be ready to talk to any leader. There's no leader who's your enemy. There's no leader who's your God. Everybody is here as a leader whose help and support you must take to resolve an issue. We began with domestic violence 1.5 years ago. Today we are addressing community issues of drinking water. Good evening. Everybody having a ration card, issues of voter ID cards, school that is not functioning very well, teachers who may not be coming to school every day, children who may not be doing homework. So the group is looking at different issues.
Again, where is the government?
Where is the government sector? Good question. You'll find them 3 kilometers from here with a lot of paperwork. And by the time I get my pension, I would have to go through 11 different department offices. Every application made in triplicate, meeting at least 25 people, bribing at least 35 of them before I get my 400 rupees monthly pension, which would take just about 1.5 years for me to start getting the pension.
Could I ask, Brenda, what do these very poor people in the slum think of you? Beautiful woman from the middle class in a gorgeous yellow sari. Who are you to them?
I think when I came here in the beginning, they just thought I might have lost my way. But now they understand that I am a no-nonsense. They also know that I'm not afraid of anybody. Whether it is the police or the local gangsters or anybody who claims to be very powerful, they now also know that I'm someone who's very forthright and outspoken. Sometimes even the women themselves are not able to grasp and understand and accept something like that. I am trying to build a group of women who are fearless, not necessarily like me, probably much better.
But Arige, you haven't told us your story yet.
Yes.
How did you get to be you?
How did I get to be me? It's not going to be a simple answer at all. My inspiration primarily has been my mother. Hmm. My father used to work in the Indian Air Force, and we've lived in the north for a very long time. My childhood was more in the north of India. In the north of India is very different from the south, very, very different. In fact, people in the north consider people with dark skin lower than them, of a different class, different caste, different race, different whatever. But I think the kind of home that I was brought up in, we are four children. I'm the oldest of the four. Mm-hmm. I have two sisters and one brother. And my mother brought us up very, very differently, with a sense of justice, with a sense of purpose. And everybody had to do all the work in the house. Girls or boy was not spared. So in fact, in my house, all of us know how to sew, how to cook, how to sweep, swab. And my brother also knows how to knit and embroidery and bake. Mm. So I think that was a great inspiration. But how did I become what I am? Okay, I'm somebody who has to question if I feel something is not okay. I'd like to just share with you a small thing. When I was in class 2, 7 years old, there was a boy who used to tease me every day because of my color. So one day, I beat him up. And the next day, we were studying in a convent school in Chandigarh, and the principal of the school wrote in my diary that my father has to come and see her the next day. So I read what she had written, and I asked her, is the other boy's father also coming? Because I know why. And so she looked at me and said, go to your class. So I came back. But I think she realized after I asked that the other boy's father has to also come. So the next morning, my father was in school. And as he was walking towards the office room, he looked at this man. He said, oh, he's my higher officer.
Oh.
So I said, oh, I see. So then the boy and me went inside. And then the principal asked me, why did you hit him? And I said, you ask him what he said to me. So she said, no, I'm asking you, why did you hit him? And I told, sister, I hit him after what he did to me and what he said to me. So he must say first, and then I say. So sister asked him. And he said, well, I pulled her plait. I was wearing two plaits. And he said, I pulled her plait. And he said something like, Kali Kaloti Bangan Lotti. Means her skin is like eggplant. And she comes from the south where people eat a lot of eggplant, and that's why her skin is like eggplant. And I said, how many times did you say? So sister said, you don't talk. I said, I'm just asking him how many times. Because he didn't say it just once. So he said, I said twice. So I said, you said twice? And he said, no, many times. I said, from when? So he said, from the time we came to school. Which is like a long time. And then she said, so what happened? I said, I just got angry. Every time I tell him, don't say this, don't say this, he never listened. So I just slapped him once. And then she said, you must apologize to him. I said, yes, sister, I will. So she said, what are you waiting for? Him to apologize to me. So he apologized, and then I apologized. I think it was from then something that if you put up with nonsense, you just get nonsense all the time. If you put up with somebody subjugating you, well, then you continue to be subjugated. And that's something that I've grown up with. Because every time I spoke with my mother, she would make me understand and realize what would be the best alternative and option. Sometime when I was in class 10, I got very angry with my parish priest. My father is a Brahmin, Hindu Brahmin.
And a Christian?
And my mother is a Roman Catholic.
Oh.
They both are very good. They both were very good athletes. And they met in the on the track and fell in love and got married. But like you can see, my mother, being a stronger woman, being the stronger person, I am a Roman Catholic. I'm a practicing Roman Catholic. I'm also married to a Hindu Brahmin who remains a Brahmin. I would like to say that the church has been a big influence on me in a very positive way. But I've also realized over the years that there are many things that I do not like happening in the church.
Remind me how old your own daughters are, and just tell me, what do your daughters think of what you're doing?
I have a daughter who's 9 years old and a son who's 10 years old. And sometimes they feel that I love this slum more than I love my house, my home. And that is why my husband and my children, my sisters, my brother, my nieces and nephews are all involved over here.
Hmm. What's the man yelling?
He's selling tomatoes. And many times I buy my vegetables from here. Good quality, less price. I don't have to buy it from AC shops that have air conditioning and cooling, because that's another different battle altogether.
And the man's got a good voice too.
Yes, he has to cultivate this. His voice has to go 5-6 blocks down. And he has a pattern every day. You know that if you hear the voice coming from the east, then in the next 5 minutes he's walking towards west. And I'm ready. Or I have told somebody, please buy 2 kgs of tomatoes. It's a different lifestyle. It's a different pattern that works here.
I want to meet the other women. And anything else you want to show us is a thrill. You tell them, first of all, they're just stunning women, beautiful women. But I'd like to know if they could each tell a quick story about how they discovered this place and why they're devoted to it.
Okay.
Mary, tell us your story. What brought you to this office?
She says that in the afternoons, we also have, this is also a child resource center. So children who finish their school can come and sit over here and clear their doubts. We have 2 volunteers over here. She says that she is part of this group because she has learned a lot of different things. She's got a lot of information that she never knew about. We talk about the laws, we talk about everything under the sun. We even discuss issues like, why did you fall in love? What did you get about, marrying? Why do you continue? What do you mean by being faithful? What do you decide when your husband is not faithful? How do you think? So it's all kinds of different things over here. Why did you vote for a certain politician? How did you decide to vote for this politician? So, everything under the sun that you would want to be discussed. The whole issue here is we learn from these other people. You have something, she has something, she has shared something. They all live next to each other but never realize that these are all things that is going in their minds every day. And so she says that she likes coming here because she learns about new things and gets new information. She has just come here. She has not officially joined to be part of the collective. There are certain criteria that when you are here, you have to also accept to be part of the solution. You cannot just come with a problem. So you have to make up the decision. You have to make up your mind and decide that that is something that you agree on. Then you come here. You may not be part of the problem, but you will take a vow to be part of the solution. So if you can do that, then you're part officially on this group.
I see. Yeah. And is that...
You cannot be someone who doesn't take a stand.
Is that a choice for her to make or for
it's
you to
It's a choice
judge?
For her to make and then be part of the group. So she says that she comes here, she talks here, but she's not yet officially part of the group. And she's welcome here.
Madam, not for the first time.
She also wants to talk somewhere.
Oh, please. This is...
Rani.
Rani.
Yes.
Rani.
Rani means queen.
Queen, indeed. continue the story.
In the Sangha open and the karname Brinda, madam.
Okay. Rani says that we have always been living over here for the last whatever 20-25 years. But now we've seen that somebody has brought us together to address issues both within our families and in our community. And it is not that we've not been thinking about these issues. It's just that we've got a certain amount of confidence that we did not have before. We know that even if we call, whether it is Maria or me, they can call us at any time of the night or day. And we would be able to discuss with them the issue. It could be even at 1 o'clock at night. And we are there to address the issue, discuss it, rather than saying, let's wait till tomorrow morning. So she says, that's the kind of confidence I have got because of being led by these people who keep telling us that we are leaders.
How do you see yourself in 10 years?
இன்னிலிருந்து 10 வருஷம் நீங்க உங்களுக்கு என்ன மாதிரி ஒரு
இருக்கிற வர வர நாங்க இம்ப்ரூவ்மென்ட் ஆவோம் கொஞ்சம் இப்படி இப்படி இருக்கிறது
நம்ம she feels that in 10 years from now this place will be better. Her life, her personal life will also be different. She would have enough information and have the kind of confidence to be able to address issues that she would never thought of even thinking about 10 years ago. And this collective will become larger, bigger.
Can I say, you know, to my eye, the children look healthy and happy. How do they feel? How do the mothers feel? Do they have the medical care? Do they have the nutrition? Do they have the support they need?
பசங்க எல்லாம் ஹெல்த்தியாக இருக்காங்கோ இங்கே ஹாஸ்பிட்டல் எல்லாம் கரெக்டாக மெடிசன் எல்லாம் கொடுக்குறாங்களா அப்போ இருங்க இருங்க வாட் தேர் சேயிங் இஸ் த ஹாஸ்பிட்டல் இஸ் ஹியர் பட் இட்ஸ் நாட் தி ஹாஸ்பிட்டல்ஸ் தட் கீப் ஆர் சில்ட்ரன் ஹெல்த்தி It's our hard work and good nutritious food that we choose to give our children that they are healthy. Hospitals always ask for bribes. They also understand that being clean is being healthy, though they will not be, they are not able to guarantee too much of cleanliness outside their homes.
Listen, I just want them to know how wonderful it's been to be here today. What a privilege. I'm so glad we came. I would have come from America just for this stop. Thank you. Thank you all.
Very rarely do we have men who would actually sit on the same plane with women wanting to listen to views and opinions of the women, asking questions, and they're very happy, privileged that you have provided this opportunity, and they're telling me that thanks for this space, because if it wasn't for this space, we would not have had this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's a great privilege for us. Paul McCarthy and Ben Mandelkern produced and edited this conversation. It isn't over till listeners add their two bits in comments on our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. Thank you for being part of the conversation.